Good morning again, everyone, and welcome to our joint service. We're so glad to have members of all these seven different churches, Bolton, Fitchburg, Harvard, Marlborough and Hudson, Lancaster, Littleton, and here at First Parish Church of Stone Acton together in worship this morning. Our worship begins with a prelude played by our First Parish Church organist and pianist, Sang-hee Kim.
Good morning, everyone. This is Rick Gelman. I'm on the Joint Summer Service Planning Team representing Stone Acton. Welcome to the 17th Annual Joint Summer Service, in which we welcome Unitarian Universalist friends from several neighboring congregations. The Joint Summer Service began in 2004 with three UU congregations joining together in the summer for a traditional worship service. This year, we're pleased to welcome seven participating congregations. I'd like to give everybody a chance to wave when I introduce your congregation, starting with First Parish of Bolton, First Church Christ of Christ Unitarian in Lancaster, First Parish Unitarian Universalist Church of Fitchburg, Unitarian Church of Marlborough and Hudson, Harvard Unitarian Universalist Church, First Church Unitarian Littleton, and First Parish Church of Stone Acton Unitarian Universalists. It looks like we have about 120 people on Zoom at the moment. So it's hard to have participation in a service like this, but here's your chance. We're gonna put up a poll and give you about 20 or 30 seconds to tell us what your home congregation is: Bolton, Fitchburg, Harvard, Lancaster, Littleton, Marlborough, Hudson, Stone Acton, or other. So please vote now and tell us where your congregation is. As it's our custom for the Joint Summer Service, and as another way to participate directly this morning, we encourage your generous support of the UU Service Committee by going online and contributing to at uusc.org during the Sharing Our Gifts section of today's service. Normally, we would invite you to join us for refreshments and conversation following today's service in Fellowship Hall, but this, of course, is not a normal year. But instead, please stay connected on Zoom after the service and join a randomly selected smaller breakout group for conversations. So here's the results of our poll. So thanks everyone for coming. And once again, welcome to all. And we look forward to seeing you next year, hopefully in person, on the first Sunday in August for the 18th Joint Summer Service to be hosted next year by the Harvard Church. Now let us begin our worship together with the introit sung virtually by the Joint Summer Service Choir.
Morning, everyone. My name is Mike Fitzer. I'm the music director at FPC, and I am really glad to be with you here today and to have done, to have made some music in a different way this year. So we know that singing together as much as being together is a dangerous thing that can cause some problems in the current pandemic that we're in. So a lot of our musicians have adapted to making virtual recordings and putting them together. So I just wanted to tell you very briefly what you're going to see today are four recordings of some hymns and some anthems made by singers from all of our congregations put together. And we have a mix of things. You'll see some videos of singers that they made at home on their own. You'll see some photos of people who are represented with their audio in the recording, but just have a photo of them up there. And then there are some people who sent in audio recordings, and they'll just be in our mix of sound, but won't have a picture or a video with them. So you'll hear a whole mix of singers, and I hope you really enjoy. The first song that we're going to share today is an introit called Yonder Come Day. It was a whole bunch of people working together to put this all together. And I'm really grateful for the volunteers in our music programs from all of our churches who participated. I hope you enjoy.
Yonder come day is a-breakin', yonder come day, oh my soul, oh, yonder come day is a-breakin', sun is a-risin' in my soul.
Oh, yonder come day is a-breakin', yonder come day, oh my soul, oh, yonder come day is a-breakin', sun is a-risin' in my soul.
I say, yonder come day is a-breakin', yonder come day.
Thank you to all who participated, and it does our souls good to see all those voices. Our opening words are going to be by the Reverend Lara Hoke from the First Church Unitarian Littleton.
From our separate congregations and from our separate homes, we have gathered virtually to worship. Even in this virtual world, we are better together. We bring a measure of sadness with us this morning that we are physically distant. We bring gladness, too, that technology enables us to connect. Writer Arundhati Roy has said that the pandemic is a portal. She says this pandemic is a gateway between one world and the next. We can imagine the next world together. Imagine the difference we can make thinking boldly together. Imagine the magic we can create. The possibilities are ours to dream and ours to make real. Another world is possible if we go through this portal faithfully, aspiring to bring about the beloved community. Let us worship.
Good morning, everybody. Neil Saunders, Chair of the Worship Committee here at First Parish Church of Stowe and Acton. Our chalice lighting words are by the Reverend Alice Anachika Naisman, Minister of the Unitarian Church of Marlborough and Hudson. In a time of uncertainty, when everything around us is changing constantly, each day new developments, rising numbers, changing guidelines, when the world we live in suddenly seems upside down and topsy-turvy, we light our chalice to remind ourselves of our grounding in our faith. We remember that the flaming chalice came into being as a beacon of hope during World War II, a secret symbol that offered help. In the midst of it all, we wrap ourselves in the warm light of a familiar flame as a reminder of the strength that emerges when we come together in community. And now we will sing hymn 1003, Where Do We Come From?, led by our joint summer service choir.
So we hope that you'll sing along from home. The words for this one are printed both in your order of service and also a little bit on the screen for you to see. So please join in singing while muted.
Where do we come from? What are we? Where are we going?
Where do we come from? What are we? Where are we going? Where do we come from? What are we? Where are we going?
Story, life is a mystery. Where do we come from? Where are we going? Where do we come from? Where are we going?
Thank you again, all those who contributed their voices to that. Our covenant that we share at our joint summer service every year is one that's been blended together from the covenants of various different churches, and it's going to be followed by our affirmation, which is similarly a blended affirmation. Sharing our covenant this morning is Eleanor Gentleman from the First Unitarian Church of Littleton.
Love is the spirit of this church, and service its law. This is our great covenant, to dwell together in peace, to seek the truth in love, and to help one another.
Our song affirmation is also a blended together version of the affirmation that is used from the Church of Harvard and the Church of Stowe and Acton. Again, please sing along.
From all that dwell below the skies, let words of hope and faith arise. Let peace, goodwill on earth be sung through every land by every tongue.
And Mary Krause from the Harvard Unitarian Universalist Church will share our first reading, A Simple Hope, by the Reverend Teresa I. Soto.
Last year, the It toy was some kind of computerized beeping egg, the frenzy and desperation reaching for the perfect gift. Sold out everywhere, this egg. Hope can be kind of like that. People strain and struggle for the perfect definition. Is it now or future perfect, as in we will have survived? They argue over whether we even need a hope more present than a maybe, even when you don't feel it. A healthy hope is the power, and beyond that, the choosing to stay. Stay with doubt and fear. Stay with the work that it takes to resist. Leave giving up for another day. You could wrestle the words or sensation of hope to the mat. Or you could let this moment be enough. Belonging here together be sufficient. Feast on our irrepressible power to stay.
Thank you, Mary. And I don't know that I actually introduced myself earlier. I'm the Reverend Cindy Landrum, a minister here at the First Parish Church of Stowe and Acton. These words of prayer or meditation, each in your own personal manner, were inspired by a ritual by the Reverend Erica Hewitt, who's a minister up in Maine and who does the UUA's worship web. Although her ritual has been greatly changed, and the words are mostly by me, I wanted to acknowledge her ritual called Holding the Hope for One Another as the genesis for this prayer today. Many of our congregations have a time when we share our joys and sorrows with one another. And we're not doing that this week because we thought it would be difficult to do across 7 congregations. But of course, there are many experiences that we've had this week, many joys and sorrows that we're holding in our hearts and in our minds. And so we wanted to take this time to personally reflect, to reach out in our spirits and our hearts and connect with one another and to hold each other in care. So what I want to invite you to do right now is to think about a hope that you have. Think about holding it even in your hands like this. It could be a hope that you have for the world. It could be a personal hope, a hope, or a hope for a loved one who's struggling in some way. Maybe you're hoping for someone ill to be well, for someone who is out of work to find work, and for someone to find some acceptance or peace. Maybe you're hoping for yourself for any of these things. Hold that hope for a moment. And now share it. Let it flow outwards. Imagine it flowing from you onto your screen or your radio or into your phone and into the arms of this gathered and beloved community. And now I want you to imagine somebody else's hope flowing to you, and you catch it and hold it tight. You don't know who sent you their hope to hold. You don't know who this hope is for. You don't know what this hope is. You just know that it represents the concern of someone held in beloved care here. And as you hold their hope, I invite you to say out loud and or in your head to that unknown person, I hold you in care. You are not alone. And I invite you to send them your love and kindness wherever they are. We may never know what hopes each of us holds in our hearts, but we do know that together we are a loving and caring community where all are welcome, where we endeavor to nourish and support one another, and where we are seen as whole and holy. Take this hope into your heart. Share it throughout the week. And remember this beloved community. May we hold each other in care this week and throughout the times to come. Blessed be, beloveds. Amen. It has been the tradition of this joint summer service from its inception that our offering every year goes to support the work of the Unitarian Universalist Service Committee. The UUSC is a faith-based UU organization that does the work of human rights and social justice, partnering with other organizations. Currently, they're particularly focused on ending family separation by ICE, continuing the work of human rights like those started by and continued by John Lewis, and protecting the right to peaceful protest and defunding DHS. We invite you to donate through their webpage at uusc.org. And Mike's going to introduce our joint choir selection for the offering.
Our anthem today is a song called Let the River Run by Carly Simon from the 1988 movie Working Girl. And we collaborated on this project with a group called Opera on Tap Boston, where we had some professional singers from the Boston area who are also not able to perform at this time, help us by recording practice tracks so that our singers would have someone singing their part in their ear while they performed it. So I think this is a really great thing. We're going to do this a couple of times at church this fall at FBC. And we're also going to have a concert in October with this group. So we'll keep you all posted on the details. But I hope you enjoy this collaboration on Let the River Run.
Coming to the edge, running on the water.
Coming to the edge, running on the water.
Running, 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 running on the water.
Coming to the edge, running, 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 running,
that was so lovely. Thank you all. Our next reading is by the Reverend Victoria Safford, and it's read by Brian Walters from the First Church of Christ Unitarian in Lancaster.
Our mission is to plant ourselves at the gates of hope, not the prudent gates of optimism, which are somewhat narrower, not the stalwart, boring gates of common sense, nor the strident gates of self-righteousness, which creak on shrill and angry hinges. People cannot hear us there. They cannot pass through. Nor the cheerful, flimsy garden gate of everything is going to be all right, but a different, sometimes lonely place, the place of truth-telling. About your own soul, first of all, and its condition, the place of resistance and defiance, the piece of ground from which you would see the world, both as it is and as it could be, as it will be. The place from which you glimpse not only struggle, but the joy of the struggle. And we stand there beckoning and calling, telling people what we are seeing, asking people what they see.
So good morning again, everyone, and it's so great to have so many of you here with us today in this virtual service. I spent the last few days, as I reflected upon that reading and on this service that we were coming together to hold this Sunday, in my spare time also watching the memorial service for John Lewis and the new season of The Umbrella Academy on Netflix and watching America's Got Talent. And in the strange juxtaposition of these three things, I found that there was a message for us today. First, John Lewis. We tell the story in retrospect of John Lewis and the other marchers for their freedom who were there at the Edmund Pettus Bridge in 1965 as a story of success now from our vantage point. They were beaten, they were turned back, but they marched again and on to victory, and the Civil Rights Act was signed into law. But there must surely have been moments after Bloody Sunday, after they were hosed and beaten there on the bridge, that there was no certainty that they would win and that this country would ever change. This Jim Crow South was built on the foundations of slavery that were built into this country from its inception. And they were trying to change that. The powers that be were the Bull Connors of this world. But beaten and bloody, they got back up and they organized and marched again, and the next time stronger in numbers, and people died along the way. They were there in Selma because of Jimmie Lee Jackson's murder, the death that brought the likes of John Lewis to Selma. The beatings on the first march, Bloody Sunday, brought down the Unitarian minister James Reeb, who would die after that second march, Turnaround Tuesday. And James Reeb's killing would bring down Detroit Unitarian Viola Liuzzo, who would die as she helped ferry people back to Selma. There were too many who never saw the success that the movement became. So I want you to think about the story of John Lewis right now, not from the end, but from the middle. From that point of being beaten and pushed back off that bridge. We know now what can happen. We know what he became, how he went on to run for office and all the things he did after. But at that moment in time, he did not. He did not know that he wouldn't die there. He did not know what would happen after the next march or the one after that. But what he had was hope. He had community and he had a vision. In his eulogy for John Lewis earlier this week, former President Barack Obama quoted from scripture from 2 Corinthians chapter 4. He said, "We are hard pressed on every side, but not crushed. Perplexed, but not in despair. Persecuted, but not abandoned. Struck down, but not destroyed." Obama was describing the civil rights situation at that moment in Selma, but he could have been using those words to describe this current summer. While much has changed from Freedom Summer to this summer, there is so much of the dream unfulfilled. And here we are right now, hard pressed on every side. On one side, we have a still sweeping pandemic. On the other side, we have a financial crisis that is economically crushing our most financially vulnerable citizens. On another side, we have protests in our major cities and the federal government sending in forces to beat the protesters and turn them back. And on another side, we have climate change. We do not know if we will ever see the other side of our bridge. Here we are, turned around, pushed back, and our only tools are the same: hope, community, and a vision. So I said I was also watching The Umbrella Academy this weekend, and I promise no spoilers, but for those of you who are not watching this on Netflix, all you need to know is stuff from season one anyway, that it's a team of sort of superheroes of a sort who are working together, sort of, to try and stop the apocalypse from happening. There's an apocalypse that they know is going to happen because time travel, but they don't know how or why or if they will be successful stopping it. It's not unlike where we are right now with, say, climate change. Here it is, a giant obstacle, no guarantee of success. They have hope. They have each other. They have a vision of what might be possible. Those are what we have too. In watching The Umbrella Academy, I was thinking about the difference between superhero movies, where heroes live in a world that is not utopian or dystopian, but just sort of a regular sort of world, and it's threatened by a huge superpowered evil force. And the difference between that and dystopian novels, in which the world has become a horribly bad place and our heroes must struggle to end this dystopian reality. The Umbrella Academy lives at sort of a juxtaposition of these two things because one of them has seen the dystopia that is to come. Where we're living now is also a space in between a normal world and a dystopia. Our world has changed radically in negative ways within the past few months, in ways that make us joke on Facebook regularly about apocalypse bingo and about how surreal this world has become. And yet, of course, most of the structures of our society are still holding together for now. But they all feel threatened. The fabric of democracy is threatened as elections become dangerous to hold and to attend, and the ability to vote by mail is threatened and questioned, and even the date of the elections seems at risk. The food supply chain holds strong for now, but has been threatened, seemingly now recovering, but still fragile. We learn of weird new side effects of the pandemic every day, every week, it seems like suddenly coin shortages. Businesses are still going under. Unemployment is still high. And of course, our environment, while gaining ground from our lack of travel, has also lost ground through important legislation and conferences and deals being put on hold or ignored while we deal with this other situation. We're in the midst of something big, a moment which will define our country and world for decades to come. So here we stand on the bridge between what was and what can be. And like John Lewis with his backpack, we have some tools for the journey. He had in his famous backpack a toothbrush, an apple, and a book, things that care for the body and the spirit. And in our metaphorical backpack, we have hope, we have community. We have vision. So when I say hope, I think it's important to define hope. The poet Jan Richardson speaks of a hope that is, quote, hope made of sinew and muscle and bone, hope that has breath and a beating heart, hope that will not keep quiet and polite. The hope that I'm speaking of is a hope that leads to action. My definition of hope always comes from the philosopher, theologian Cornel West. And he said, our courage rests on a deep democratic vision of a world that lures us and a blood-drenched hope that sustains us. This hope, he says, is not the same as optimism. Optimism adopts the role of a spectator who surveys the evidence in order to infer that things are going to get better. Yet we know that the evidence does not look good. The dominant tendencies of our day are unregulated global capitalism, racial balkanization, social breakdown, and individual depression. Hope, he says, hope enacts the stance of the participant who actively struggles against the evidence in order to change the deadly tides of wealth inequality, group xenophobia, and personal despair. End quote. A blood-drenched hope that enacts the stance of the participant who actively struggles against the deadly tides. That is the hope that I'm talking about. We see that hope in the protesters in Portland in particular, but across this country where they've been actively resisting and peacefully protesting for weeks, and also drawing attention to the federal forces that have been brought in to disrupt the situation. Or we can see that hope in Greta Thunberg, particularly when she first started protesting, one child alone, skipping school, protesting to save the planet, not knowing she would become the face of a movement, not knowing that others would join her, not knowing if she would make a difference, but determined to take action to change the deadly tides of despair. I saw this kind of hope for years with the representative John Conyers of Detroit. John Conyers introduced the HR 676 in 2003. This was a legislation for universal health care, and it was not taken up by Congress, and he reintroduced it every legislative session since, from 2003 to his retirement in 2017. He watched it year after year as it failed to get introduced, and he never gave up. The number of supporters along with him, the co-sponsors of the bill, grew from 25 to 120 over those years. Cornel West talks about a hope where we don't know that things are going to change. He says, hope and optimism are different. Optimism tends to be based on the notion that there's enough evidence out there to believe that things are gonna be better, much more rational, deeply secular. Whereas hope looks at the evidence and says, it doesn't look good at all. Doesn't look good at all. Gonna go beyond the evidence to create new possibilities based on visions that become contagious to allow people to engage in heroic actions, always against the odds. No guarantee whatsoever. That's hope, he says. I'm a prisoner of hope, though. Gonna die a prisoner of hope. Again, end quote. So that's where I come to America's Got Talent, which I mentioned back at the beginning. Every year, every summer, my daughter and I watch the latest season of America's Got Talent. America's Got Talent loves a good story. The harder someone's life, whether because of bullying or some sort of physical condition or poverty or illness, the more the judges and the audience seem to appreciate their talent. Their story is told, and then they do their talent, their song or their dance or their knife throwing or whatever it may be. And this season, they had the hardest story ever. Archie Williams, a 59-year-old African-American man, came on and talked about how he had been falsely imprisoned for a crime he did not commit for 36 years. 36 years he waited in prison until he was finally freed by the Innocence Project through DNA evidence. Turns out that the woman who was raped by a serial rapist, and his DNA was on file for years before they freed Archie Williams. And then he sang Elton John's Don't Let the Sun Go Down on Me. And I challenge you to watch that and not cry, because I've watched it like 5 times and I cry every single time. I cry just thinking about this man in prison for 36 years, singing to himself, hoping someday he'll be out. Don't let the sun go down on me. If you want to see his next performance, he'll be on the show again on Tuesday. Archie Williams' story, and the story of so many others falsely imprisoned, is a story of hope. A hope that doesn't expect change. A hope that has already seen how broken our system is. A hope that has no reason to believe that anything is ever going to get better. But a hope that perseveres beyond the odds, despite the odds, a hope that knows that there's no logical proof that things will change, but keeps on in the darkness, keeps on in the prison walls, keeps on in the streets, keeps on in the face of overwhelming obstacles, and does not let the sun go down on it. This is the kind of hope we must have now, a hope that keeps fighting against the odds, a hope that motivates us to action. We still don't have universal health care years after the legislation was first introduced, but someday we will. And John Conyers will be a part of that story, although he never lived to see it. Someday we will, as a united world, truly address climate change, and Greta Thunberg will be there to see it, I think. Someday we will address the deep racial injustices in our country and create a more perfect union. And John Lewis won't see that day, but people on the streets of Portland and Boston and all of our little cities and towns will. And someday the prison walls will come down. And I hope Archie Williams is there to see it, because we will have hope, a hope that keeps us moving until those days come. The second thing we have to have as we stand upon the threshold facing futures yet unknown, as one of the other hymns in our hymnal states, or as we stand here on the bridge or before the gates of hope, is we must have community with us. When John Lewis crossed the Edmund Pettus Bridge, he did so with a community of people that had come together, united for a cause. When Archie Williams got out of prison, he did so because a community of people gathered to him to support his case and see it reexamined. In the protests across this country, people are coming together, united in a cause. It's the power of community, the power that Marge Piercy talks about when she says in her poem, The Low Road, 12 make a demonstration, 100 fill a hall, 1,000 and you have solidarity and your own newsletter. Usually when I talk about the power of community, I'm talking about what we can do as an individual church community here in Stowe and Acton. But today we are 7 churches coming together in community. And we did this initially to show that there is something that can be created that's bigger than what we are individually. And it's something different than when we worship individually each and every other Sunday of the year. This has been going on for 17 years that we've been partnering together for this one worship service. And other partnerships have grown between our communities as well. Some of our communities do OWL classes together. Some of our communities do other social justice events together occasionally. But we can do more. And what if it was more? What if we took this time in this epidemic, this time on the brink, this time on the bridge, and we used it to become more deeply united, not just through our region and not just through the UUA, but united here in this area, pulling together in some ways more for common goals, for the common good. And I'm not suggesting we sell our buildings and merge into one, but I am saying that there are ways beyond what we've been doing where we can unite to build the larger dream that we dream of. If we're protesting here in Stowe, and you're protesting there in Littleton and Lancaster and Harvard and Hudson, in Bolton and Fitchburg and Marlborough, what can it mean if we're doing so in a way that is connected? Connected as Unitarian Universalists individually, connected as Unitarian Universalist faith institutions, connected as residents of this part of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, connected in faith and action. How much more is our voice amplified? And what's true for a protest is true for the work we do in community in so many ways. When John Lewis was in Selma and Martin Luther King was in Selma, King called out to the white ministers across the country and asked us to come. And the call went out to the Unitarian Universalist Association, and they called James Reeb and said, Jim, can you go? And Reeb and Miller and Orloff and dozens of other Unitarian Universalist ministers and Unitarian Universalist laypeople, and then the board of the UUA itself, went down to Selma, called by the bonds of brotherhood, of fellowship, called by our principles to take part. And this movement grew until it was so large it could no longer be ignored. It could no longer be turned back, and they crossed the bridge and kept marching. our faith too has a power when we come together, and when we use that third tool in our knapsack, our vision. This is our vision of a world with a better future. This is a vision of a world where no longer are people killed by police violence. Our vision of a world where everyone has health care. Our vision of a world where our college graduates are not drowning in student debt and education is affordable. Our vision of an earth made green again and all her creatures protected. Our vision in Unitarian Universalist comes from our principles, from our first principle that tells us that LGBTQ people and immigrant people and people with disabilities and people of all sorts, we have inherent worth and dignity, through to our middle principles, which talk about the power of our democratic faith in action, to our seventh principle that says about the interdependent web of which we are all a part. Our vision from these principles leads us to this bridge again and again, and our hope propels us forward with community, our companions, as we cross it. And we will cross this bridge too. We are hard pressed on every side, but we are not crushed. We are perplexed, but we are not in despair. We are persecuted, but we are not abandoned. We are struck down, but we are not destroyed. As John Lewis tweeted out two summers ago, never give up, never give in, never give out. Keep the faith and keep your eyes on the prize. Or in the words of Five in the Umbrella Academy, hey, get up. We're going. Where? To save the world. Or in the words Archie Williams sang, don't let the sun go down on me. Together, my friends, together we build beloved community. Together with hope, we have action. Together, we will cross the bridge. May it be so. Our closing hymn is one of my favorites. Now, I say this about a lot of hymns, but this one is the only one in the whole hymnal where I took a pink highlighter and highlighted the number of the hymn so that I could find it easily, since I don't remember numbers well, and so that I could find it in my hymnal whenever I wanted it, because it brings me so much hope. And so please sing along if you wish, or listen and enjoy as our joint summer service choir sings, "Soon the Day Will Arrive." you all again for coming, and I'll share some more words of what will happen next after our postlude. But first, our benediction by the Reverend Jill Cowie of the Harvard Unitarian Universalist Church. Harvard is our host for next year, where we hope we'll be in person again.
Definitely. So grateful to be standing on this bridge of hope with you. Thank you for such a beautiful and powerful service. The words of benediction I offer this morning are written by James Morrison. Within each of our hearts, there is a most glorious light. Go forth and let its spark help you understand what troubles both you and others. Go forth and let its light of reason be a guide in your decisions. Go forth and bring its ray of hope to those in need of help in both body and spirit, that they might find healing. Go forth and fan the flames of passion to help heal our world. Go forth and spread the warm glow of love, pushing back the darkness of the world. Go forth and share your glorious light with the world. Amen, and blessed be.
Here at First Parish Church of Stone Acton, we broadcast our services by radio out into our parking lot. And so while we haven't been doing that this summer because most of our radio listeners have been away for the summer, we made that option available today just in case anyone from any of the other churches here wanted to experience that. So I want to thank Brendan Chetwin for making that service available. And I think we have one other car out there in the parking lot. So it's customary right now for me to invite you to honk. So honk away. And of course, I can't hear the honking up here in my office. And so you can't hear it either because my recording isn't picking it up, but the neighbors do. And so it's a moment of cheer and joy as we celebrate this opportunity to share our message in various different modalities. For those of you who may have joined by phone, I want to let you know that as we go into our breakout groups, if you are both on phone and on video, those two devices will get split. So you need to just shut your video and listen only by phone at this time as we go into our virtual coffee hour groups. And so what we do now is we invite you to join in some virtual coffee hour groups. These are, we break you into different groups of anywhere from like 6 to 10 people. And depending on how many people stay on the line. And we keep those open for 15 to 20 minutes for you to have some conversation. The coffee is what you have at home available to you. So if you don't have coffee and you want to go pour yourself a cup, or if you just want to join and then enjoy, partake in something later, it's up to you. So again, thank you all for coming and being here with us today. And now we're going to have our groups.